Good evening. Fighting intensifies in the Horn of Africa. What does peace in Afghanistan look like? We talk to a peace activist, Trump's campaign against the vote, and we take your calls at 212-209-2877 in our second half hour. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the extended WBAI News for Saturday, November 21st, 2020. More than 2 weeks into Ethiopia's offensive against the region of Tigray, the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says its army seized another town in their march towards the rebel-held capital. Hundreds, possibly thousands, have died, and more than 30,000 refugees have fled to Sudan since the conflict erupted on November 4th. Threatening to engulf the region, fighting has spread beyond Tigray. Rockets were fired at the neighboring Amhara region in the nation of Eritrea. Eritrea denies allegations from the Tigray People's Liberation Front. It sent soldiers over the border to back Ethiopia's offensive. On Friday, the African Union appointed former presidents of several nations as special envoys to seek a ceasefire and mediation talks. Aid workers fear a humanitarian crisis in Tigray, where a large number of people were receiving international food aid even before the fighting erupted. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with Afghan and Taliban negotiators who are trying to break a deadlock in their stalled peace negotiations. The meeting was held in the Gulf nation of Qatar.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You all will work that out. Sit on the side, help where we can. I'd be most interested to hear your thoughts on how we can increase the probability of the successful outcome that I know we share.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Pompeo landed hours after a deadly rocket attack in Kabul, the Afghan capital, killing at least 8 people and wounding more than 24. Reportedly, the Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack. The Pentagon said this week that it would reduce the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan by nearly half to 2,500, down by 4,500. Down from 4,500 by mid-January. But at a hearing of the House Armed Services Committee, Chairman Adam Smith expressed alarm with the troop drawdown in an exchange with former ambassador to Afghanistan, Ryan Crocker.
We are not going to impose peace on Afghanistan. We are not, you know, however we're going to bring a coalition together and try to build institutions and reduce corruption and build confidence. Outside forces are not going to bring peace to Afghanistan. One way or the other, the people of Afghanistan are going to have to make that choice. And it seems to me at this point that the common sense thing to do is to have the absolute minimum presence that we require to meet our goal of stopping that transnational terrorist threat. I happen to believe that we need to draw down there.
It will take strategic patience, and it will take continued U.S. engagement. The peace process, so-called, that was launched now almost 2 years ago, represented a very bad U.S. concession. This, again, so-called peace process, that's not what this is about. These are surrender talks. We're waving the white flag, basically saying to the Taliban, you win, we lose. Let's dress this up as best we can. Al-Qaeda did attack the homeland from Afghanistan, hosted by the Taliban. They have not become kinder and gentler in the intervening years. It is, I'm afraid to say, folly to think that a full U.S. troop withdrawal is somehow going to make us safer or uphold our core values.
Former ambassador to Afghanistan Ryan Crocker, questioned by House Armed Services Committee Chairman Adam Smith on the Trump administration withdrawal from Afghanistan. Longtime peace activist Kathy Kelly scoffs at Crocker's assertion of American surrender. She says these statements are about confusing the public.
Here's what's not confusing, I don't think, Paul. I think it's clear that Afghanistan is a country that has been devastated, wrecked. Life has been made unlivable in the country because of years and years and years of war. And for the last 19 years, a war exacerbated by the United States, which has led to not one single fulfillment of what the United States said it was going to do. And instead, when you look at the charts in terms of every single province in food insecurity, it's a disastrous situation for women and children, and they make up the majority of the people of Afghanistan. So I think for people in the peace movement, we have to press for a fund to get set up so that billions of dollars, similar to the billions poured into the war, can be put in trust so that the conditions that people need to survive can begin to be met. But do not entrust it to NATO or to the United States. I think it's also imperative to make sure that every militarist that's ever been involved there starts to clean up all of the ordnance and bombs that they've dropped all over that country. And for the United States to say, we're sorry for ever having detonated the massive ordnance air blast bomb, the biggest bomb we had in our arsenal when President Trump came into power. And then finally, there will need to be some kind of a peacekeeping presence. I'm a pacifist by persuasion. I don't like to call for a force, but okay, suppose you take it to that level. It should not be made up of NATO or Western countries. Appeal to other countries. It won't be easy for people in Afghanistan.
Now, Ryan Crocker, a former career diplomat, was questioned at the House Military Committee, and he said, these are surrender talks. What do you say to that, the idea that this is a disgrace, America is surrendering?
In terms of talking about something that's disgraceful, what British generals said publicly, and what John Sopko, the person in charge of the Special Inspector General Afghanistan Reconstruction Reports, has said, he said that he found himself astonished by the, and this is a direct quote, the mendacity, hubris, distortion, and lies that were constantly being told by military and civilian people from the United States involved in Afghanistan and also their counterparts within Afghanistan. Of course, it's disgraceful when that amount of human suffering has been endured and the people profiteering from it. And let's name them: Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Boeing, all of the weapon makers and war profiteers. Just keep continuing it and say, no, 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 don't let go. Don't let go now. It'll be a disgrace to us. Well, be embarrassed. Be very embarrassed by what's been done, but don't continue it. We have to ask ourselves with regard to NATO and General Jens Stoltenberg, who's in charge of NATO, who immediately went into the New York Times and Washington Post on Thursday of this week and said, you know, you can't withdraw troops now. This would lead people to think that we're, as Ryan Crocker said, surrendering. Stoltenberg told us in 2014 that we were very close to being successful in Afghanistan. And who in NATO is so involved in Afghanistan, and why? Why are Poland and Finland and New Zealand and Jordan, why are all of these countries so involved in Afghanistan? Is it because they care about women and children and ordinary people in Afghanistan? Or do they eventually end up with companies, corporations, sustaining their efforts there through transportation or through interpreters or through food supplies or through building, construction, whatever. And those companies might be pretty upset if all of a sudden the contracts don't count anymore because they're not going to be there anymore. Well, let the companies, I'm sorry, be upset. There's something of greater priority than corporate profit.
Peace activist Kathy Kelly. Meanwhile, Afghan civilians say they've lost trust in the government, that the government can protect them from more bombings. An attack on Kabul University earlier this month killed 22. The Taliban denied responsibility for that attack as well. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Back in the USA, Georgia's governor and top elections official yesterday certified results showing Joe Biden won the presidential race in Georgia over Republican President Donald Trump.
Earlier today, Secretary Raffensperger presented the certified results of the 2020 general election to my office. Following Judge Grimsburg's ruling yesterday, state law now requires the governor's office to formalize the certification, which paves the way for the Trump campaign to pursue other legal options in a separate recount if they choose. We demand complete explanations for all discrepancies identified so that our citizens will have complete confidence in our elections.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, a Republican, certified results that show Biden leading Trump by a margin of 12,670 votes, or 0.25%. Later Friday, Governor Kemp certified the state's slate of 16 presidential electors, but he didn't clearly endorse the results, instead saying the law requires him to formalize the certification. Meanwhile, outside the Georgia Capitol, crowds of pro-Trump protesters chanted "Stop the Steal" and called for the full counting of what they say are legal votes.
We will stand behind what the actual legal vote is. Legal votes only.
Good answer.
Legal votes only. And if that happens to be Biden, then we'll stand behind that, and then we will push hard and strong for 2022. And we will make sure that we're fighting for Loeffler and Stop the Steal, and you know, the Senate elections, and we'll just keep fighting.
If Joe Biden truly is the president, you know, it's just 4 years of a guy, like, he's not going to really have much impact on our personal lives. We're just going to go back and forth between Democrat and Republican. You know, that's how democracy works.
America first! America first! America first!
Meanwhile, President Trump made a rare appearance since the election to announce a prescription drug plan. That was yesterday as well. He veered away to blame the drug companies for trying to sabotage his bid. And then Trump reiterated he was the winner of the presidential election.
This is not an easy thing to do. Big Pharma ran millions of dollars of negative advertisements against me during the campaign, which I won, by the way. But, you know, we'll find that out. Almost 74 million votes. We had Big Pharma against us. We had the media against us. We had big tech against us. We had a lot of dishonesty against us. But Big Pharma alone ran millions and millions of dollars in ads. In fact, I looked at it. I said, who is it? I've never seen anything quite like it, because I told them I'm going to have to do this. You know, I was put here to do a job. And Pfizer and others, we're way ahead on vaccines. You wouldn't have a vaccine if it weren't for me for another 4 years, because FDA would have never been able to do what they did, what I forced them to do. And Pfizer and others even decided to not assess the results of their vaccine. In other words, not come out with a vaccine until just after the election. That's because of what I did with favored nations and these other elements, instead of their original plan to assess the data in October. So they were going to come out in October, but they decided to delay it because of what I'm doing, which is fine with me, because frankly, this is just a very big thing, a very big thing. What I'm doing here, I don't know if anyone's going to appreciate it. These people can't even believe it. Alex, even you can't believe it, can you? Look at you. So they waited and waited and waited, and they thought they'd come out with it a few days after the election. And it would have probably had an impact. Who knows? Maybe it wouldn't have. I'm sure they would have found the ballot someplace, the Democrats and the group. These corrupt games will not deter us.
And Trump's comments came after his press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, said basically that her boss is taking a pot shot at Democrats who hamstringed his administration with impeachment and accusations of collusion.
Look, I would say that there are real questions on mass mail-out voting. We have put those questions forward, and we've said this for the better part of a year. There was a bipartisan commission that talked about and identified the real potential for fraud with mass mail-in voting. Also, something that I would note is just we talked a lot about transfer of power in the election, and it's worth remembering that this president was never given an orderly transition of power. His presidency was never accepted. In fact, before the election, his election, we know Crossfire Hurricane was launched by Peter Strzok to pursue a baseless allegations about the president's ties with Russia. That's before he was president, trying to subvert the will of the American people. We know in August, Peter Strzok wrote a text message about an insurance policy against a Trump presidency, once again trying to silence the voice of the American people. In 2016, we know in October that there was a FISA warrant taken out out to spy on the Trump campaign. And then the American people spoke, and they spoke commandingly in electing President Trump despite all of the odds. And what happened after he was elected? You had 70 lawmakers say we're not coming to his inauguration, Democratic lawmakers. You had Elizabeth Warren saying we're going to attempt to obstruct the Trump transition by urging the Government Accountability Office to investigate the incoming Trump transition. In January of that year, you had President Obama have a by-the-book meeting where they talked about the Logan Act, using that act to go after Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. Just before the inauguration, you had BuzzFeed promoting and publishing this bogus Steele dossier that's been widely debunked. And then for 2 years, you had the basis Mueller investigation, which searched for collusion, found none, and exonerated President Trump. While in 2016, President Trump became the duly elected president, many sought to undermine him, discredit him, delegitimize him, and deny his victory. There were no calls for unity. There were no calls for healing. So while every legal vote is counted, let us not forget the inexcusable transition or lack thereof that President Trump had to endure in 2016 and 4 years into his presidency. Thank you, everyone.
And that's White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. Just as a note, President Obama made many personal entreaties to Trump during the transition between the Obama and Trump administration. Trump failed his transition 4 years ago after Chris Christie, who was his initial transition chief, was removed after a dispute with Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Meanwhile, members of the Michigan State Legislature's Republican leadership, who met with Trump at the White House Friday afternoon, say they haven't been seeing any evidence that would change the fact that President-elect Joe Biden won their state. Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey and Michigan House Speaker Lee Chatfield said in a joint press statement after their meeting with the president, quote, "We have not yet been made aware of any information that would change the outcome of the election in Michigan." Both said it's a blow as Trump delivers a long-shot effort to overturn the results of an election he is losing. Democrats were enraged at the unprecedented assault by the Trump campaign on the vote, despite losses in almost every suit his team, headed by former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, has brought to try and swing the Electoral College away from Joe Biden, who won the election by 6 million votes and with 306 electoral votes to Trump's 232. Michigan Senator Debbie Dingell, speaking on Friday, called Trump a cheater.
Here to share with you our, honestly, the word is outrage and concern at the trip that is being taken today by Speaker Chatfield and Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey to meet with President Trump at the White House in what is clearly an attempt by the president to change the results of the elections. Joe Biden won the state of Michigan by a margin 14 times greater than Donald Trump won our state 4 years ago. The president is trying to, I don't know what word to call it, is it cheat his way to victory by pressuring local officials.
And that's Michigan Senator Debbie Dingell speaking on Friday. And Biden campaign legal advisor Bob Bauer called Trump's attempts to overturn the vote an abuse of power.
It's an abuse of office. It's an open attempt to intimidate election officials. It's absolutely appalling. Actually, in the context of all these losses and the record of failure that I just described, it's also pathetic.
And former Trump advisor Steve Bannon was at it again last week, tearing into Dr. Anthony Fauci and FBI Director Christopher Wray, calling for them to be executed for treason the old-fashioned way, for not giving enough support to Trump.
It's a second term. Second term kicks off with firing Wray, firing Fauci. Now, I actually want to go a step farther, but I realize the president is a kind-hearted man and a good man. I'd actually like to go back to the old times of Tudor England. I'd put the heads on pikes, right? I'd put them at the two corners of the White House as a warning to federal bureaucrats. You either get with the program or you're gone. Time to stop playing games. Blow it all out. Put Rick Grenell today as the interim head of the FBI. That'll light them up, right?
Well, you know what, Steve? Just yesterday, there was the anniversary of the hanging of two Tories in Philadelphia. These were Quaker businessmen who had cohabitated, if you will, with the British while they were occupying Philadelphia. These people were hung. This is what we used to do to traitors.
That's how you won the revolution. Nobody wants to talk about it. Revolution wasn't some sort of garden party, right? It was not. It was a civil war. It was a civil war.
That's Steve Bannon on his internet program, The War Room. At a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on Friday, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg was asked by Democrat Richard Blumenthal about the video, which was distributed on Facebook before it was taken down.
The efforts to stop this kind of amplification and spread. Let me ask about Facebook community standards, which ban language that, quote, incites or facilitates serious violence. As you know, on November 5th, Steve Bannon, in a Facebook Live video, called for beheadings of Dr. Fauci and FBI Director Wray for not acting more favorably toward President Trump. Twitter banned Bannon for these remarks. You removed the video, Mr. Zuckerberg, but on Thursday, you reportedly told Facebook employees that Bannon had not violated enough policies that he should be banned from Facebook. My question to you is, how many times has Steve Bannon allowed the call for the murder of government officials before Facebook suspends his account?
Senator, as you say, the content in question did violate our policies and we took it down. Having a content violation does not automatically mean your content, your account gets taken down, and the number of strikes varies depending on the amount, the type of offense. So if people are posting terrorist content or child exploitation content, then the first time that they do it, then we will take down their account. For other things, it's multiple. I'd be happy to follow up afterwards. We try not to disclose
his account.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Will you commit to taking down that account, Steve Bannon's account?
Senator, no, that's not what our policies would suggest that we should do in this case.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, questioned by Democrat Richard Blumenthal at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing last week. And now the WBAI News is going to pass it on to you, the listener. We're going to be taking calls with my next guest, who's going to join us in a moment live on the phone in the studio. He's Eitan Edwards. You might know him as a author of the book Preparedness Now, How to Get Prepared for Every Kind of Situation You Could Ever Imagine. He's an author, activist, radio and TV host, and he knows a lot about the issue of how we deal with the situation, as was just announced by Steve Bannon, as revolutionary in nature. In this case, a right-wing revolution supported by Mr. Bannon and his followers. We're going to be talking more about that. Our phone number is 212-209-2877. We're going to take a little musical break after that, but you can call and queue up on the line for asking your questions or making your comments to the WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo, and our number is 212-209-2877. Now, a musical break. All right. We're here to push the news. Curtis Mayfield, Pusher Man. Wow, blast from the past. You hear the 70s hits when you listen to the WBAI News musical breaks. Thank you so much. Our engineer, Giovanni Anglin, has been doing such an amazing job on short notice handling the very complex operation that is the live WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo, and you are listening to WBAI New York. And we are here until, 6:55, I guess, to take your calls at 212-209-2877. And joining me to help out, joining us again, hasn't been on for a while, so thanks for dropping in from your north of the border, where the winter snows are already coming in, I imagine, Eitan Edwards.
Yeah, what's going on, Paul? Thanks Eitan, for having me back, man.
Great to have you again.
Well, I don't see any snow right now, but it was very, very warm yesterday, and, it's global warming, so this isn't the Canada that I came to several years ago. It's visibly different. I mean, you can feel the difference in terms of the temperature during the colder months has risen to a degree that it's actually kind of disturbing in a lot of ways. It is what it is nowadays, right?
Yeah. That's why we're talking, because, I don't know if you caught a little end of the news there, but it was pretty apocalyptic to hear Steve Bannon talking about hanging officials in the government to send a message that they should bow down to lame duck president.
Well, you know, Paul, that Steve, it's funny because it's funny. I brought up something recently that happened. I don't know if you remember it, but I don't know that you were doing something a few years ago. It was when I believe it was Patricia Okomo, when she had just climbed the statue, and you were at a hotel that I think I was coming to meet you or something, or I was going to this hotel in 60 something street, and Bannon was actually there.
Right. I remember that. That was right there at where 59th and 60th Street meets, a hotel there, the famous St. Regis, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember walking into the hotel and running into him in the lobby. And I mean, it was kind of like a very interesting, paths crossing. And
did you get a chance to talk to him? He seems sort of friendly.
Hey, how are you? He stuck his hand out to like shake my hand, and he could tell that I wasn't going to return it. But I just remember telling, a mutual friend that you know who it is, that I ran into Steve Bannon, and he said, "Did you get him?"
You give him a little taste of his own medicine, right? At least his face, anyway.
Is that I knew this. You know what he said to Trump when Trump. Before Trump was in office, if he got in, he said that it was going to be a war. And he telegraphed that there's going to be some things that you're going to have to do that are ugly things, but you're going to have to do it. So he's kind of like, even though he's no longer formally part of the Trump administration, he's kind of like, this is par for the course from him to say those kinds of things, because he wants to stir up that element.
This funny, I was covering his involvement with the wall, this phony company where they were building the phony wall, and I actually called people who lived like down the street from where the wall he was building and was arrested for, along with other members of his company, had been charged with defrauding people who sent money expecting to build a wall and actually going into their common expenses to live off of, which is totally illegal, that the wall was actually built right on the edge of the river. So the first flood, which happens every year with the with the Rio Grande River, that it would probably wash the wall right away. It was just not being built to be a real wall. They were just sticking up some metal plates and then using that to get money from people, the panhandle, right? Basically. And then pocket the money, is at least according to allegations. We don't know. He hasn't been put on trial yet. But do you think this has always been the issue, to me. Are these people fascists? Do we have to prepare Eitan Edwards for a fascist takeover of America? Or are these really the clowns they seem to be? What's your opinion? I mean, Giuliani with the higher hair dye running down his face, the vice president with the fly on his hair. I mean, it seems almost too good to be true.
Well, we know that there's always been a fascistic element in the United States, and even the structural, like the Nazi movement, the Bund Party, back in the 30s and the 40s. And you can kind of cut a few years ahead and the let's say the rebooted KKK and the rebooted Nazis and the National Alliance Party and there's a bunch of different Nazi organizations that have always been in the States, but I think that what's happening now is a major it's not so much maybe not a change, it's not the word for it, it's there's a surge of interest in terms of people who sympathize with the groups and would never join. It's a major problem. It's a major element within the United States that the people are going to have to contend with, because there's way too many of them. I mean, they've been allowed to grow I mean, the FBI and the different law enforcement agencies that are supposed to kind of like regulate these kinds of organizations and shut them down when they become too dangerous, they've been passively allowed to grow for many, many years, well beyond their ability to control them.
And, of course, we have something I didn't mention earlier in the news, but I'm glad we're having an opportunity. Kyle Rittenhouse, who was freed from a Kenosha jail yesterday after his attorneys posted $2 million bail, which was collected in part from the the My Pillow guy, Liddell.
The My Pillow, right? Ricky Schroeder, the actor.
And the actor, right, from NYPD Blue, I remember, right? That was he played a crazy detective in that one. So they have. So what does that represent? I mean, $2 million. Do you think that this kid should have gotten bailed out?
Of course not. The guy murdered. He murdered people, and he also shot someone who tried to pull his weapon away. He's a kid, first of all. That under no circumstances should he have been – he was driven there by his mother, his parent. I mean, who does that? Who puts their child in an environment that is that potentially explosive? And you actually come from out of your own city to travel to another armed? It's just like – it's absolutely incredible. When I found out today that – Ricky Schroeder and the My Pillow guy bailed this guy out who murdered people. He murdered him. That's when you kind of know what this element within the United States is. So it's not just fascistic. It's also kind of nihilistic, because what they want to try to achieve is not possible in the construct that we have today and what the United States actually is today. I mean, you know,
they'd have to rip it down, in other words, and to start over and rebuild what they want. They'd have to destroy what's there now, as Trump is trying to do.
Everything.
Well, do you have a few minutes with us? You want to take a few calls? I think we have some folks on the line.
Yeah, take some calls. Come on.
Yeah, take some calls. We're used to that. All right. Giovanni, if there's anybody on the line, feel free to let them come on, and we'll into the lion's den.
All right, caller, you are now on the air. Please tell us your name and where you are calling from.
Thanks, Paul. It's Russell up in Westchester. I'd like to mention on the eve of JFK's assassination anniversary that people who thought they were saving us from communism took our president out because they had good intentions. But, Paul, I want to, you know, after you reported on Eritrea and Ethiopia, you reported that the Taliban denied shelling Kabul, and it reminded me that they were mortaring the Green Zone in Baghdad recently. Is that
well, that's not the Taliban. That would be in Afghanistan. It's a different group. That's part of the problem, is that a lot of these fights are contributing to the idea of a sectional collapse, which is sort of – the U.S. is not immune to, too. These countries have multinationalities, and the idea of the nationalities turning on each other is in religious sects and what have you, but they amount to nationalities turning against each other within countries that have been established for a long time as countries, and happening even in the United States as we speak about it today. Some people are saying it's apocalyptic, although all apocalypse really means, all Armageddon really means, is a revelation of a truth. It doesn't necessarily mean what people say, but are we heading into an apocalyptic period now? Is that what's going on?
I'd like to ask Eitan a question. I'd like to ask Eitan a question, because I think another alternative is that elements close to the U.S. military are mounting these attacks designed to keep us involved over there. And I want to ask you, is that a bridge too far for you to cross to see that the upcoming Biden administration is hand in glove with U.S. militarism? So I'd like to ask Eitan about how are we going to credibly switch to criticizing Biden after cheerleading for this neocon blue no matter who? And one more thing, I'd like to tell you, Steve Bannon was speaking metaphorically, okay? And a real investigative reporter would look into how Fauci slipped the Wuhan funding back into the Trump administration in 2017. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Okay. Eitan, what do you want to say to, and a lot of people, I have to say, I know a lot of people have been, swept up in all of these conspiracy theories. How do you tell when a conspiracy theory is real, let's say the Kennedy administration, and when it's fake, like, Dominion voting is a front for a dead strongman of Venezuela?
Well, I think personally, it's almost like an old engineering principle. It sounds silly, but it's actually true. you know, keeping something very simple, you know, the keep it simple, stupid principle. And that is, the more moving parts that you have in any kind of a mechanism, the more chances there are that, you know, that one of them can fail. So when you start talking about these very complex conspiracies that have lots and lots of different moving parts that would have to kind of like work in unison, that's when you know that you're probably kind of stretching kind of reality, because knowing, it, you know, there's always been the joke about, you know, you have three people in a room and you tell them to keep a secret and, you know, the secret is already done. So
right. That's why they have – right. I just want to remind folks, Eitan Edwards we're speaking with, and our on-air number is 212-209 – let me get that again. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877 if you'd like to join us for this conversation. And what I'd like to ask author and activist Eitan Edwards is, what do you think, since we're talking about conspiracies, and it is, as the caller reminded us just a couple of days before the anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963, a day before, what about this QAnon? Does QAnon really mean anything real? Have you been following them at all?
Yeah, I've heard someone call QAnon Scientology for the trailer park set, right? It's, you know, people have like a lot of free time and they have the internet, which is like the resource. You know, it's funny how the internet can be used to enhance one's mind, and it can also be used to kind of like degrade it as well. And you have a lot of information that's out there, and people kind of like have this echo chamber effect of kind of like pulling down the information that they want to see or want to hear. And So groups like QAnon are fueled by all of this like conflicting and all this crazy amount of data that people can pull up and then pull these conspiracies together in their heads. Because people don't really, really want to look at the reality of things, because sometimes it's a little bit too harsh. I think it's easy to imagine these kind of conspiratorial activities that they presume that are taking place. Then it just kind of like look at the real obvious kinds of realities.
It's too
kind
frightening.
It mystifies it and makes it sexier. And a lot of these things, it's just the shortest distance between two points, man. A lot of this stuff is just real simple stuff, but they'd rather make it seem that it's all this crazy stuff that's going on. So, I mean, I don't really know
medieval,
how to control it. It's
almost
like
medieval.
Like a data
we have a caller. Eitan, we have another caller on the line. I wanted to give maybe another chance to throw in some fresh ideas that we can chew on for a while. Go ahead, Giovanni. Okay. Bring him on.
Okay. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Okay. Welcome. Good evening. I'm Jackie from Brooklyn. And I'm a senior, and I don't quite understand when you're saying the conspiracy theories. Are you referring to people categorizing Bannon and Trump, or are you saying Trump and Bannon are the ones who are developing and publishing the conspiracy theories?
Well, I have to just I really actually think some conspiracy theories are quite accurate. And have been following them and been the source of several myself, because I think there really are conspiracies in the world without a doubt. What I'm making a distinction between are they real conspiracy theories, or are they made up in the same way the fascists and Adolf Hitler, for example, was very famous for making up conspiracies in order to support his brutal policies of cracking down and destroying democracy. There were always these conspiracies. But that is different from the real conspiratorial actions that really do exist. And that's what I think Eitan was getting at. What makes it so confusing for people is that, yes, so you have to be able to discern the real conspiracy from the fraudulent conspiracy.
Okay, but this
You know, I give you I'll give you a perfect example, caller. I would consider like what is the name?
Kayleigh McEnany.
Kayleigh McEnany, yeah, Lion Barbie, right? So the other day when she comes out to the press thing, and she says that when the Trump administration during the transition didn't have any help from the Obama administration, that the Obama administration was obstructive and okay. that they didn't provide them the things that they needed during the transition. Now, when you dial that back a few years to when Trump came in, and Trump himself sat in one of the rooms in the White House and spoke about how great the Obama administration was, how helpful they were in making the transition easier. Michelle Obama called up Melania, walked her through the process of what's going to happen to the first lady, all this stuff. And then it all comes down to this one woman gets up in front of the press and then says, the Obama administration didn't even help Trump to come in. And there you have another conspiracy that's been launched that people are going to believe. That's why they say the things that they do, because they know that that element is going to take what she said and it's just going to blow it up into something even more, despite the fact that Trump said.
Okay, but I'd like to interject here. Okay. Yeah. First of all, one of the reasons why people like to latch on to the latest two-week-old conspiracy theory is because people refuse to study and understand history. Now, if people understood, just like you pointed out, about Hitler and developing all these conspiracies to support his policies, then you could see how the Trump administration and all the people that are aligned with him, not just the administration, but people in the background, in the foreground, have almost gone playbook by playbook in developing these theories and just cascading the press with one lie after another. They don't even try to now pretend that they're telling the truth. So the problem is that people are very gullible. A lot of people are fueled by their racism. A lot of people are fueled by their fear. So when, 70 million people voted for Trump, so that says something about America.
Yeah. Yep. But 80 million voted for Biden, which is so. Yeah, actually, whenever Trump says 72 million voted for me, I'm the most for a president in history. I laugh and say, and your opponent got 80 million. I thought that was a democracy. Caller, let me ask you this, and then we're going to move on. I just want to remind folks that our number is 212-209-2877 if you want to join us here on the air. But, caller, I want to ask, how do you armor yourself against, how do you prepare yourself against false conspiracy theories as regards to filtering them so you know what the things you really think are true are?
Well, first of all, you know, I told you I'm a senior, so I'm a senior citizen. And also, I've been trained in certain areas of critical thinking and history and all these things. But the two most important things that people have to investigate and understand, not just depend upon the media, they have to read and study and find out things for themselves, whatever kind of media that they're listening to. And then the other part of that is that I'm also a person who's a person of faith. And you're using words like apocalyptic, but I'm not going to go off on religious tangents. But the issue is that people have to understand there's a spiritual aspect to this evilness and wickedness that's pervading the world. And I think the fact that Trump and his administration have policies where they don't really care that people die. So that gives you an understanding of the depth of their wickedness. That
all right.
can just sit back and let 200 plus thousand people die, and people are still dying. But in closing, I want to say this. Yes, Biden won, and I supported him. But the point is that Biden is going to be faced with just or worse obstructionist policies by the Republicans when they start this new administration. It's already beginning before he's even sworn in.
All right. Thank you, caller. Appreciate your time. I see a lot of truths here. I'm really glad we had her on because she really is helping us understand all of this. Eitan, what do you think about the satanic side of things? I mean, you are an expert of preparedness. How do you prepare against a spiritual apocalypse?
I think that if anything, and people have to kind of embrace a sensibility that recognizing just what the basis of our morality is, and looking at the things that we're doing to ourselves and the world, and making a decision to not follow that course of action, and to do things that are more positive. You know, we live in such a destructive world, and we do so many destructive things. So I think that spirituality isn't just like worshiping any particular deity. I think the spirituality is achieved by the actions that you take. And too much of us have been caught up in crass materialism and capitalism, and we really can no longer see the forest for the trees. We've just kind of become like what George Carlin had once described as obedient consumers, and living day to day without any connection to this universe and why we're here and what we should do. So,
right.
You know, I do believe that spirituality is a part of it. We don't see our place in this universe anymore. We only see ourselves as consumers. And once you get that materialistic and once you get that disconnected from just life and existence in itself, then I think that you're going to have a pit. And I do agree. Listen, this is an apocalypse. It's a change. It's a switch. You know, it's revealing a lot. I mean, we now kind of know, like, you spoke at the opening of the program about, do we live in a fascist nation? Do we have fascists? Yes, we do. Now we know that at the very least there's 71 or 72 million of them that are willing to overlook some of the racist, awful, bigoted, vile statements that Trump made during his campaign and during his tenure as president to, you know, just allow this kind of thing and dismiss it. And so if we have that many people who are willing to support this person, considering what he's not just doing to people, but what he's also doing to the environment. We live on this planet, this very small planet, that we're just destroying on a daily basis. You know, we still have just tens of thousands of nukes. I mean, the U.S. has, like, I think, like 5,900. Oh, yeah. The Russia's got 6,000, almost 7,000. The British have 215. France has got 290. Israel's got about 100 or 200. I mean, this is a powder keg of a planet. And we're not doing the thing that we should do to kind of like de-escalate a lot of these different situations.
How about the stolen nukes, the ones that are out there that were stolen when the Soviet Union collapsed?
Yeah, there's about 103. They're called SADMs that are no longer in their inventory. That's the Small Atomic Demolition Munitions Kit. Nobody speaks about this stuff anymore. Sooner or later, I can tell the listeners, sooner or later, one of them is going to turn up.
What's the main thing as a person, a purveyor of survival instinct and survival preparedness? What is the first thing everybody here should know? Here's this message about nukes floating around and the possibility of a great breakdown in society and a ecological collapse and natural and man-made disasters making each other worse.
Well, if what people can do is, I can tell you this much, is that you don't want to be one of these hunker down kind of, you know, and it's strange because I was part of the whole doomsday prepper program. I mean, I was the tech advisor for it when it first started initially. And, you know, I was actually on it, did an Escape from New York episode about Indian Point. That's why I did it. I think that people have to recognize what the caller said. There has to be a spiritual humanistic element to everything that we do at this point to avoid this cataclysm that we're running towards at this point, right? And that people have to recognize our humanity first. We have to change and shift our paradigm. You know, we have these enormous amounts of homeless. We have an enormous amount of people that are suffering, and we have to kind of turn away from the crass materialism that has kind of created this environment and look back on the humanistic principles that we should kind of base our actions and our lives on.
Okay, let me give somebody, I don't know if there's anybody on the line right now. Our number is 212-209-2877. We can squeeze in one or two calls. I hear there's nobody on the line right now, but we really want to get some input from our listeners and folks who like the news. If you have been following the WBAI news, which, by the way, is usually heard Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., so tune in Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., or you can go to WBAI.org, and we post the news there at the end of every day, and you can listen to the news programs that are posted there. But our number is 212-209-2877. We got a couple of minutes left, so if you want to jump in and have something to say, just call on up or take your call. We're talking with Eitan Edwards. He's the author of Preparedness Now. He's an expert on survival and how you survive in an emergency, an apocalyptic emergency like we've been talking about. So tell me, Eitan, just to wrap up, what are we facing right now? I mean, is Trump, do you have optimism that Trump was defeated in an election? He's on the defensive, or do you see more problems ahead?
No, I see problems. I mean, Trump, obviously he lost. I mean, he's not going to, in administration, they lost. And, you know, he's a baby. He's just, I don't have anything other to say. It's just a piece of crap that, and along with his administration. But yeah, we have major, major, major problems ahead. Just in the economy alone, because we're rapidly approaching, you know, January the 1st, when the rent abatement stuff is going to disappear. There's still been no stimulus checks for millions of people who are literally living from hand to mouth at this point.
Okay, Eitan, we have somebody on the phone. I think that's very interesting. Okay. Let's hand it off to the caller. You're on the air. Go ahead.
My name's Bob. I'm from Long Island. First of all, I want to say I've been calling for about 10 minutes. Whoever has control of
we don't have a lot of time, so let's jump. Sometimes that happens. Jump ahead. You're on now. You have it now. We don't have a lot of time.
People don't know about the CIA having created the words conspiracy theory back in the 1960s to try to make people not, you know, force people into believing the Warren Commission, the silly Warren Commission report. Does anybody know about that?
So what do you think about the we only have a real lot of time, so just in the last 30 seconds, how would you tomorrow being that anniversary, what do you think? Hello? Am I on the air? I'm not.
You're on the air.
I'm on the air. Yeah, what happened to our caller? I think we lost him.
I think Anton might have disconnected. Is that was?
No.
You're still here. Okay, great.
Okay. All right. We lost our caller. Sorry about that. But Eitan, so what do you think about tomorrow being? We got 30 seconds. What do you think tomorrow being the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination? What's the lesson?
Well, I would love to see like some of the information that the government does know about his assassination to be completely, all of it to be released. I'd really like to know what happened with Curtis LeMay and Mitch Werbel and the Cubans and a bunch, also the Mafia and the so-called, some of the different people that were.
Why were they all after Kennedy? What was it about this guy in just 10 seconds that got everybody from the CIA to the Mafia out to get him?
Well, he was revolutionary in the sense that he wasn't holding the line of the past. He was trying to break free of a lot of the old, lines that were left when he took office. And he wanted to kind of create a new, better country, and that threatens a lot of people's positions. So they felt that, especially after Bay of Pigs, and a lot of people just felt that he had to go. Within the military, people didn't like him. Johnson didn't like him. A lot of people did not like him. Hoover didn't like him. So he was someone who had basically had a target on his head from his election. And, you know, a lot of people resented the fact that, you know, they felt that the Mafia kind of got him in to office and fixing the vote in Chicago and a bunch of other things. So
Trump has an argument. There has been vote fixing by Democrats.
No, it's been fixing by everybody. There's always been fixing in elections. But in this case, even if there was a fix, he still lost. He's a loser that has lost. He just has problems. He's probably got some sort of, I don't know, he's probably got some sort of a mental condition or something.
Eitan, I'm going to leave it at that. Thanks a lot for joining us, Eitan Edwards, author of Preparedness Now. It's great having you on as we come to the end of this program. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Eitan Edwards is our guest. Giovanni Anglin is our engineer. We were produced with help from Linda Perry. My name is Paul DiRienzo. Check out the WBAI News Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Thanks for joining us. I know she'll be the death of me. At least we'll both be numb. And she'll always get the best of me.